Today in Los Angeles, the President of the United States delivers the fifth of five major speeches scheduled during his West Coast trip. Mr. Truman will deliver the speech extemporaneously, a method he has adopted for a great number of the talks made on this tour. The Chief Executive will be introduced by Mr. Walter Ames, Chairman of the Greater Los Angeles Press Club, the organization that has hosted today's luncheon in the Ambassador Hotel. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ames.
Members and guests of the Greater Los Angeles Press Club, the President of the United States.
President, Governor Knight, Mr. Mayor, distinguished guests and members of the press club. This has been a most rousing welcome in this great city in Southern California. The mayor of Omaha told me that the greatest crowd that had ever been on the streets of Omaha was there to see me at that great city. At Butte, Montana, there were more people in the arena than live in Butte. I think they must have come from miles around in order to see what I looked like and hear what I had to say. At Spokane, Washington, early in the morning, there were about 2 acres of people downtown in a park in the center of town. Seattle, the greatest reception they said that anybody had ever received in that great city. San Francisco, the same way. And here you top them all. The reason I make that reference, it was said over the radio the other night by a member of the Senate that I was stopping at the whistling stops and misinforming the people about the situation. Los Angeles is the biggest whistling stop at which I've been trying to speak on the issues on this trip which are before the country. That's my privilege as President of the United States. I have a right and a duty to inform the people what I believe is good for the country. And I took this opportunity before Congress adjourned because I think there are some things that Congress has not done that they should have done. And I wanted to give them an opportunity to find out what the people think of those things that they have not done. Therefore, I took this trip before the Congress adjourned in order that they may have an opportunity to act. I sincerely hope they'll take advantage of that opportunity. They still have time, and if they haven't time, they ought to take it. I wanted the record to be entirely clear. Congress should pass laws for the benefit of all the people, in my opinion. And they should pass those laws to meet the situations with which we are faced. And we are faced with some very serious situations. The one I think that is most important and is closest to everyone is prices. Prices have been on the skyrocket ever since July 1946. When the price control law was repealed by furnishing me with an impossible law which I had to sign because I'd vetoed one just as bad on the 30th of June. I had to take the law of July 31st or have none. And I said at that time that it was worse than none, and it turned out to be just that. Now the price index, which is made by the Bureau of Labor statistics and on which everyone in the country relies for the situation in the price setup. At the time that those price controls were released was in the neighborhood of 130 or 133. Immediately after those price controls were released, that price index went up 20 points, and it's been steadily climbing ever since. It now stands in the neighborhood of 172 and a fraction. That means that costs of everything that you have to have, food, clothing, everything which you have to buy, has gone up almost 50%. That means that the dollar that was worth a dollar at 133 is worth about 66 and two-thirds cents at the present time. Now, in September 1945, in my message to the Congress, which stated the 21 points on which I proposed to stand as president, I asked for an extension of the price control law, which expired on June 30th, 1946. In the message on the State of the Union in January 1946, I made the same request. In May 1946, I made the same request. I got nothing. I got a law that was no good, that wouldn't work. I called a special session of the Congress in November 1947. In the meantime, in the message on the State of the Union, I had told the Congress what the state of the price situation was at that time. But in November 1947, when the special session was called, I set out a 10-point program, which I asked the Congress to give me to meet the situation with which we were faced in regard to prices and commodities. You know, the object of the price control law in wartime was to protect the consumer. It was a consumer's price control law. This 80th Congress has said that prices would adjust themselves. Well, the prices have adjusted themselves and are adjusting themselves. They've almost gone off the graph, adjusting themselves in favor of the man who controls the goods, and the consumer pays through the nose. Now, that situation has not been met. We should have a standby price control law to be put into effect when it's necessary, and it's necessary right now. And we should have an allocation law which would allow the allocation of scarce materials into the channels where they'll do the most good. Nothing's been done about that situation. I still hope the Congress will act. Now, the next thing in which you are vitally interested down here, and every great city in the country is vitally interested, is housing. Housing. 4 years ago, while I was in the Senate passed a bill called the Wagner-Ellender-Taft Housing Bill. That bill died in the House. Efforts have continually been made ever since that time to pass that bill. And the fundamental thing in that bill is a federal low-cost housing program. That's a low-cost rental housing program. Had that bill been passed 4 years ago, or 2 years ago, or 1 year ago, we would be beginning to get some benefit from it now. This city, I think, understands the housing shortage better than the Congress does. When I was here during wartime, you had an immense housing shortage. The mayor tells me that the situation has not improved because every GI who was trained in this part of the world wants to come back here and live. that Taft, Ellender, Wagner bill, you see they reversed it in this 80th Congress, has passed the Senate. And is now pending in the House. It would still be helpful if the House would pass that bill. The chairman of the Committee on Banking and Currency in the House has been sitting on that bill. But the other day, he got the surprise of his lifetime. The committee took the bit in the teeth, and 11 Democrats and 3 Republicans voted that bill out to the calendar of the House by a vote of 14 to 13. 11 Democrats and 3 Republicans voted that bill out. Now, it's necessary under the House rules that a rule be made so that that bill may be debated on the floor of the House and passed. The Rules Committee now can roost on that bill until the Congress adjourns, unless the people of the United States wake up and do something about it and force action. The chairman of the Rules Committee is a little bit tougher than the chairman of the Banking and Currency Committee, so I doubt very much whether we'll get action, but the Congress ought to stay in session until we get action on the housing bill. It's vitally important to the welfare of this country that we have proper housing. Proper housing at a cost at which men and women can afford to live in the houses. At a cost which will not take everything that these GIs have. At a cost which will be easy on the people who have to pay the bill. I think the Ellender-Wagner bill would in all probability help to meet that situation. I sincerely hope something will be done about it. Now I have another subject in which you're vitally interested and which I've been discussing on this trip. And that's the labor situation. The Republican platform of 1944 in bold, broad type, made the statement that they would build up a real labor department, that they would strengthen the labor department. Do you know what they've done to the labor department? They have practically abolished the labor department. They have practically put the labor department out of business, not by proper legislation, but by choking it to death with appropriations that are not sufficient. The last great contribution that this 80th Congress made to the Labor Department was to so choke off the Bureau of Labor Statistics that it's impossible for them to act. And every business, every branch of the government is dependent upon the Bureau of Labor Statistics to find out just exactly what's happening in prices and in the labor market and everything else that goes on where statistics are needed. You see, they were not satisfied with taking the lid off the prices and letting them go at a mile-a-minute rate. They want to jerk the speedometer out of the car so you can't see how fast you're going to the dickens and to inflation. The last great effort they've made on the Labor Department is to take the U.S. Employment Service out of the Labor Department. They've already taken the Conciliation Service out of the Labor Department. And I'm saying to you that I think the Labor Department is one of the most important and necessary departments of this government. And I think the Congress ought to study this situation and take the necessary action to restore the Labor Department to the department which I had built up in the first 2 years I took over. The Labor Department suffered during the war. it necessarily had to suffer during the war on account of the special agencies which had to work during the war. I've been trying to restore that Labor Department to its pre-war height. That's what ought to happen. I think the Congress ought to take some action on that before they quit. They want to jerk the speedometer out of the car so you can't see how fast you're going to the dickens. The last great effort they've made on the Labor Department is to take the U.S. Employment Service out of the Labor Department. They've already taken the Conciliation Service out of the Labor Department. And I'm saying to you that I think the Labor Department is one of the most important and necessary departments of this government. And I think the Congress ought to study this situation and take the necessary action to restore the Labor Department to the department which I had built up in the first 2 years I took over. The Labor Department suffered during the war. It necessarily had to suffer during the war on account of the special agencies which had to work during the war. I've been trying to restore that Labor Department to its pre-war height. That's what ought to happen. I think the Congress ought to take some action on that before they quit. Now then, the Congress, their Republican platform was very much interested in Social Security. I've been asking the Congress to broaden the base of Social Security so more people could benefit from the Social Security Act, so that more people could get the benefit of employment insurance and help to pay it while they work, so that when they're out of work, they'll be contributing to their support when they are out of work and will not have to go on relief. Now, do you know how the Congress has broadened the base of the Social Security? They've just taken 750,000 people off Social Security and sent me a bill to that effect and tied a rider onto it, increasing the old age assistance, hoping that I'd take that bait and let them get away with tearing up Social Security. I didn't do it. I vetoed that bill this morning. I told the Congress if they would pass the bill in the proper form, I'd be happy to sign it, and they have plenty of time to pass it in the proper form. Don't think they have. Now, I've had a health program. I sent the Congress a special message on health and health insurance. And they've had plenty of time to hold hearings on that, to debate it, and to go into it. And they've done nothing about it. Now, the health of this nation is the foundation on which the nation is built. I've made a personal study of that situation. We've got a health and accident situation in this country that's the most disgraceful of any country in the world. There's only two classes of people can get the proper medical care nowadays. And that's the indigent and the very rich. The ordinary fellow who gets from $2,400 to $5,000 a year and is trying to raise a family and keep up a home can't afford to have his family get sick because he can't afford the medical care at the price it has to be served at now. Something ought to be done about that. A healthy nation is a great nation. And unless we maintain the health of this nation, we will not have a great nation. I'm interested also in those people who are disabled in industry. I'm just as anxious to see those people restored to working ability as I am to see these crippled GIs properly taken care of. We've done a magnificent job with the GIs. We can do the same sort of a job with those who are crippled in industry. In Seattle the other day, I was in an institution that's just starting to rehabilitate men and women who are injured in industry. Do you know that there are in the neighborhood of 26 million people in this country who have been injured and who are permanently disabled or temporarily disabled, and that the vast majority of those people could be rehabilitated and put back on a self-supporting basis if the situation was properly approached. That's appalling. And the vast majority of those people are injured in automobile accidents. The most terrible weapon that was ever invented by man. It's much safer in the front line in a war than it is on the roads in this country in peacetime when the automobiles are going full tilt. I've had session after session on that subject in Washington in an endeavor to remedy the situation. I wish the Congress would go into this health situation and pass an intelligent health bill for the benefit of the whole country so everybody could get medical care at a reasonable price when he needs it. I appointed a commission to make a survey of the educational situation in this country. That commission made a formidable report and pointed out exactly what the conditions in the schools in this country is, what the conditions are today. And I made a recommendation to the Congress that the federal government make a contribution to the support of the schools of the nation. No action. No action. It's the most disgraceful thing in this country that the teachers of this country are not adequately paid. There are conditions in nearly all the public schools in the country where the teacher has so many pupils under her care that she doesn't even have time to learn their names. Something must be done about that. The bill has passed the Senate, and it wouldn't take 10 minutes for it to pass the House. They weren't roosting on it over there. They should stay in session until they pass a bill for the assistance of education in this country. Now, I have sent a special message to the Congress on agriculture. I made a speech on the agricultural program at Omaha, Nebraska, on a national hookup of all four networks. And I set out very clearly in that statement and in the message which I had sent to the Congress what the agricultural program in this country should be. You know those support prices for agriculture will expire at the end of this year. Now there's a bill pending before the Congress which is adequate to meet the situation if we could only get it passed. A lot of these gentlemen who are interested in taking over the residence of the President of the United States in 1949 have been out in the Farm Belt telling the people what is necessary for a farm program and how strongly they are for it. Now, some of these people have a powerful influence in this 80th Congress. And if they really mean what they say, they ought to do something about it. They can do something about it. There's plenty of time. You see, unless this price support bill is passed, the farm situation can very easily go back to what it was in the 1920s when the farmer had about $4.7 billion in income against about a $30 million income last year when the farmer didn't have a dime in the bank, and if he'd have had the money to put in the bank, he'd have been afraid to go and put it in at that time. He now has $23 billion in the banks. $23 billion in the banks. And he's not afraid of losing it, for there hasn't been a bank failure in this country in 3 years. Now, you've got something down here that you're vitally interested in, and I'm vitally interested in it, and so is the whole West. I've told people all over the country that the most valuable thing west of the 100th meridian is water, and that the proper development and control of the water resources of that area is more important to that one-third area of the nation than any other one thing in it, for without water you can't exist. I always considered this of vital importance to this part of the country, and I've made recommendations on three separate occasions in the budget in regard to that. And this Congress last year cut that budget appropriation, and they cut this one, but they didn't cut it quite as much because, this is 1948. It makes a difference. You know, old Dan Webster, when the United States was trying to build the Pacific Railroad, made the statement in the Senate along in the 1830s that the West wasn't any good, and the further it could be kept from the eastern coast of the United States, the better off the country would be. And there are a lot of Republicans now that bleed just like old Dan Webster did. But money spent on reclamation and public power and irrigation is an investment. It gives a return of the money to the Treasury of the United States. It creates more agricultural production, and had it not been for the tremendous agricultural production of this part of the country and the Mississippi Valley, this country would have been in an awful fix in the last war. That's one of the greatest contributions ever made in the history of the world, was made by agriculture during those war years. And they're still making that contribution, for had it not been for the immense crops which we've been able to raise in this country, millions of people would have starved to death. You know, this country has done something never done before in the history of the world. This country has prevented the conquered nations from starving. When the Napoleonic Wars, millions of people starved to death in Bavaria and in Germany and in Poland. We've made every effort to prevent people from starving to death after this last terrible war. And I want to see the agricultural sections of this country properly improved. I want to see the water resources of these rivers properly used. I want to see the proper development of the Columbia River Basin and the Central Valley of California and the Colorado River, and I want to see them integrated on a power basis so there won't have to be a brownout. Now, gentlemen, that's a synopsis of eight important measures in which I'm vitally interested. There are several more, but the time is too short, and I don't think I ought to try to inflict any more conversation on you about what Congress ought to do. I think I've made it perfectly plain in eight major instances. And I do that in a most kindly frame of mind. I know the majority of the congressmen as individuals. They are fine people. I have some of the best friends in the world in the Congress. But when I speak of the 80th Congress and its accomplishments in the last year and a half, I say that that Congress has not done very much for the benefit of the people. They've passed a rich man's tax law. They've passed a lot of special legislation that helps special classes. And I'm against class legislation, and I've tried to show that in numerous vetoes. And I made this trip so I could lay before you personally my views on this subject. And if I'm wrong, you'll have a chance to tend to me later on. But if I'm not wrong, you ought to tend somebody else. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard the President of the United States.